This is the CACEIS Climate Briefing Podcast, Episode 2. So the words of world leaders are all about urgency, about action now and about working together.
It's simple. Will we act? Will we do what is necessary? Will we seize the enormous opportunity before us?
Yes, it's going to be hard. But yes, we can do it.
Prince Charles opening the COP26 UN Climate Change Conference put the global economy on alert.
The scale and scope of the threat we face call for a global systems-level solution based on radically transforming our current fossil fuel-based economy to one that is genuinely renewable and sustainable.
We all know that we need to look after ourselves. We all need to have a medical or go to the dentist, but we put it off.
Rowan Douglas is head of the Climate and Resilience Hub at the insurance company Willis Towers Watson.
If we leave it much longer, we're going to be in the realms of palliative care, not actually curing the problem. And that's why these next 10 years, the climate decade is so important.
The chief executive of RBS Group, Alison Rose, says the banking sector is ready to step up.
We know that the climate challenge is one of the biggest challenges we're going to face, but actually funding and creating sustainable supply chains, sustainable businesses, and we are rewiring the economy.
Former Governor of the Bank of England, now UN Climate Envoy, Mark Carney, talks about businesses being the drivers for change.
There is a gap between ambition and policies. Governments should look at what the private financial sector is doing and know that the money is there for the transition.
Ralph Toomey from the Grantham Institute for Climate Change at Imperial College London says companies need to keep pace with policy changes.
Policy could change quickly, and people call this disorderly transition. So if there is a sudden political shift, companies are not prepared, and then they are effectively flat-footed.
I'm Pat Sharman, Managing Director of CACEIS in the UK, and our aim in these podcast briefings is to address the reality of climate change and look at what we all have to do in the pensions industry to move forward. Whether we're trustees or asset managers, there's a certain collective responsibility here, and we're in a powerful position to influence the behaviour of businesses for decades to come. Joining me for this episode is Jessica Fries, who is the Executive Chair of Accounting for Sustainability, established by Prince Charles, the Prince of Wales. We also have Chandra Gopinathan, a Senior Investment Manager with Railpen. So Jessica, there's a growing focus on moving to net zero. What does net zero actually mean, and why do you think it's important?
As we've seen the Climate Summit up in Glasgow, COP26, there's been that real focus on net zero. So in the build-up to COP, we saw loads of governments, pension funds, companies, all sorts of investors committing to net zero, often talking about net zero by 2050. But really, what underpins it is that we know that the more greenhouse gas emissions we put into the atmosphere, that has a direct impact in terms of temperature increases and an impact on global warming. So we know that ultimately we need to get to zero, and to be honest, beyond, so to actually negative emissions, to stabilise the climate. So it's really fundamental from a climate stability perspective that we can get to zero. And we know that within emissions, there's a lot of work that particularly the UN and the science community has done that underlines effectively, we have a carbon budget. So we know that to keep the increase in global average temperatures to at most 1.5 degrees above pre-industrial levels, and that's the figure, that's the limit that science has really underlined above which the impacts, physical impacts from climate change get worse and worse, the consequences for lives, livelihoods, and from a pensions perspective, for the finance consequences get worse. So we really need to be accelerating that reduction. A couple of years ago, the UN put out a report which underlined that and highlighted that we really need to be halving emissions up to 2030 and then getting to net zero by 2050. And the net is the bit that I think trips a lot of people up. We know that just from the natural systems, we're never going to be able to get to zero itself. You know, a lot of natural systems emit greenhouse gases, and then the Earth also, there's a lot of natural systems that absorb greenhouse gases. But we know that from a pension fund perspective, from a corporate perspective, from a global economy perspective, man-made emissions, we really need to be accelerating that reduction to zero.
And then, of course, other sort of initiatives like, you know, trees. So that's a really quite good example, isn't it, of being able to net those emissions. So if we, for example, for the I'm talking about the normal person like me, you know, you might be able to net your emissions by planting lots of trees.
And that's definitely what people call nature-based solutions, to get into the jargon again. So we know that not just trees, but soil, at the oceans, there's some quite interesting stuff being done on seaweed as a really great way of absorbing greenhouse gas emissions. But at the individual level and at the corporate level, actually there's a lot of the investments that get made to offset really don't work very effectively. So take your example of trees. Mm-hmm. And so for a pension fund, really you should be thinking about how you can accelerate towards the absolute reductions and offsetting. Increasingly, people are seeing that as something that you might do on the side. You know, there are clearly potentially wider benefits from thinking about offsetting, but you really need to be thinking about the absolute reductions.
You know, Chandra from, you know, Jessica refers to pensions. And, you know, so does Railpen have a net zero target? And how are you managing that?
No, absolutely. We do have a net zero target as being in an investment manager, a pension fund, an asset owner. We have a target to reduce emissions by 25 to 30% by 2025, about 50% by 2030, and to reach net zero. And what I mean when I say net zero is essentially the amount of emissions emitted versus the ones removed. So that's netting out by 2050 or sooner. So hopefully, and we are actively working across our investment portfolios, across our operating company as well, to be able to reduce those emissions going forward.
So how do you do that? Do you disinvest?
No, disinvestment is really the last option as it relates to net zero. The idea is to engage with companies. Engagement is key. So what we do is we've started collecting the data around our portfolio. So we've done the exercise for our public equities and our public fixed income portfolio. We're moving on to the private and real estate portfolios as well, where, as we know, data is a bit more challenging. And then once we have a good idea of what our emissions footprint looks like, both in terms of scope one and scope two emissions, again, I'm getting into jargon, but that then we determine which the key culprits, the key emitters are within our portfolios, and then we engage with those companies. So engagement involves, you know, assessing those companies first fully in terms of where they are in their climate transition.
What do we mean by climate transition, Chandra?
The net zero plan itself. So where they start in terms of where their emissions profile begins, and do they have a plan to go going forward of how they're going to reduce their emissions going forward?
And how do you check they've got that plan?
Well, this is part of what we do. So climate risk assessment is all about, you know, reading through a company's plan. There's what's on paper. Mm-hmm. And then there's what the numbers tell you. So assuming that you have all the numbers in order. Mm-hmm. So data collection is a big part of it, data gathering around the company itself, reading the company's transition plan, and then talking to the company and understanding exactly whether they're walking the talk. Simple enough, right?
Simple. Sounds easy. Sounds great. You know, I think we'll have to come back to the scope three. You talk about scope one and two. We don't want to get too technical. We will come back to scope three and supply
Absolutely.
Chains because I think that's one of the biggest challenges. So, Jessica, you was going to say something.
Oh, I was
there.
Just going to say that 2050, you know, that's a long way away.
Yeah.
And so for CEOs, for you know, most people, they're going to be a long way from responsibility for what's happening now when those targets are realised or not. Mm-hmm. And so really asking those questions about, okay, so what's the next year? What's the 3 year? What's the 5 year? What's the 10 year is really key. And I think increasingly as part of the transition plan, you'll see people saying, okay, so you've got your goal, but if you leave it until then, that's far too late. And then also, how do you get to 2050? Do you get it by postponing and then suddenly trying to reduce? It's about this budget. Mm-hmm. So the quicker we can reduce, the better. So it has to be about the action now.
And that brings us very nicely into standardisation and, you know, the TCFD reporting rules, which now require certain pension schemes over, you know, a value of $5 billion to report in line with TCFD. I'm a big fan of the TCFD, by the way. I think it's great. But they have to report both direct and indirect carbon footprint of the portfolio as one of the metrics. So, but how in practice is this working?
So I think the great thing about the TCFD, so very long, yet another little acronym, Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures, is the fact that it ties not only into the metrics, and I'll come on to that in a sec, but also the fact that it's asking questions about how the organisation is governed, its strategy. So some of that forward-looking information, which, you know, that's really what you're looking at is what has happened so far. Are you on track? But how are you setting that right pathway to the future? The risks and the opportunities. Yeah. So there's an upside to that as well, particularly in certain industries, and some really, you know, interesting investment opportunities in terms of the solutions. So we mustn't focus just on the risk, but that solutions piece too. And then the metrics. And the metrics clearly are essential in terms of tracking progress. You touched on that point of scope 1, 2, and 3. Yeah. So I think for a pension fund, for those in the financial services sector, the key question, the key focus, and the thing that's really challenging to get the data for is that financed emissions. So your total exposure through your investments is clearly the big question, the big number. And for companies, it's the same sort of thing. So that full value chain, end to end, do you really have a handle on what the emissions are throughout the whole value chain? And are you putting in plans to reduce along the full value chain?
Some of the supply chains are really, really challenging. You know, cobalt mines in Congo. How do you check that there isn't, you know, any child labour? I'm slightly moving away from climate change, but it's just a supply chain sort of example. How do you audit that? You know, or how do you ask your asset managers to audit that fact that that's not happening?
To be fair, it's an accounting issue that you're talking about. So you're starting to think about, okay, how are these numbers represented within companies? And I would say, before we get into asset managers and asset owners, I think we need to start thinking about corporates first and how this is going to be enforced in some ways on corporates. Are there accounting standards which are relevant with our material? Are they capturing all these things correctly? Are companies required to report these things correctly? Corporates in particular. So the investment managers and the asset owners invest in these companies, but the disclosure really needs to come from there. So that's the basic bit that needs to be in place. Things are getting better, definitely, with TCFD rules in place, with, you know, accounting rules in place, and organizations like yourselves who are working towards that kind of disclosure. I think that definitely makes things a lot better. You know, like Drucker said, what can't be measured can't be managed. So the first thing you need to do is make sure you have enough means to measure it.
So Jessica, so how do we make TCFD a global standard?
It's already really on its way to becoming a global standard. So one of the big announcements at the COP26 summit was the establishment of something called the International Sustainability Standards Board. And that was formed out of a couple of the existing big standard-setting organisations under the main international financial reporting standard setter, the IFRS Foundation. And there's already been commitment from the UK government, for example, to be, yes, adopting TCFD now, but then as soon as the ISSB releases standards, which are based on TCFD, so don't worry, this isn't about something completely new. It's very, they've signalled it'll build on what's already out there. So you're seeing governments like the UK indicating that they will adopt these ISSB standards. You're seeing the EU connecting some of the standards that they're developing to the TCFD, and certainly this International Sustainability Standards Board was welcomed by, I think, 30-odd governments around the world. So others have signalled that they will be adopting the TCFD recommendations, and that then does drive a bit more of that consistency globally, at least when it comes to not just climate. They've talked about climate first, but it will pick up on some of those other really key environmental and social issues. The other thing that I would say is that there's some really interesting technology solutions out there as well, which particularly when it comes to that full value chain, are really giving you the kind of insight to be able to understand some of these risks.
But, you know, where do we tackle the private sectors, Chandra? Because pension schemes, you know, invest not only in listed companies, but they obviously invest in, you know, the private sectors. And these are private sectors not always captured by the likes of, you know, the TCFD taxonomies, etc. So how are we going to tackle that from a pension scheme perspective to get the full picture of, you know, the carbon emissions of a pension portfolio?
Yeah. No, I think it's a really good point. And I think what you have on the public market side, clearly the private side is still catching up to a lot of the data requirements and information requirements that exist. I wouldn't paint the entire private market space with one brush. There is the real estate property space where, you know, you have things like the World Building Council, Better Buildings Partnership in the UK, et cetera, who have their methodologies towards net zero carbon, particularly, you know, as it relates to development, as it relates to embodied carbon. So there are methodologies and tools in place, and, mm-hmm. and there is definitely a push towards more better tracking systems and technology, which allows you to capture that information on real estate. On the private debt and equity side, it's a slightly more difficult discussion, particularly in private equity. I think that's where a lot of the limited partners need to work with their general partners to be able to push through some of these things. It's moving forward. There are proxies available, which isn't my favorite way to look at data, because it gives you some information, but it's not really the actual. But the things are moving forward. I mean, I think using public company proxies, using some of this information and holding your borrowers to account, particularly new lending, coming and bringing that that sort of discipline in, a net zero discipline, data disclosure discipline in there, I think is a big part of sort of getting them along for the ride.
So, and of course, you also, you know, invest globally as a large pension scheme. So how does it differ from your perspective across the world?
The international accounting standards are going to be a huge change towards actually harmonizing a lot of that information. So there are initiatives happening in various different countries and emerging markets as well, but it's happening in a sort of haphazard kind of manner. So there is standardization still needs to work its way through. Thankfully, you know, between the UK, Europe, and to some extent the US as well, things are sort of moving forward on the climate accounting side as well. So there's developed markets, and particularly Europe and the UK, are leading the way in terms of moving forward, and a lot of the emerging markets sort of adopting from there, which, you know, we hope is going to move things in the right direction.
I mentioned earlier, I'm trustee on a very small DC trust-based scheme, and we're doing our best, and we're already screening, you know, our portfolios for carbon footprint, carbon emissions. Some of those bigger schemes, you know, they're already there. They're already having to report in line with TCFD. So how are they going to manage these challenges with getting the data from, you know, companies and issuers?
The starting point with TCFD is definitely about the approaches that you've adopted. So back to that point on the governance. So how are you and how are your trustee board really thinking through your understanding of climate risks? So what kind of principles have you put in place? Have you got the right access to the right kind of expertise and knowledge amongst your board of trustees and through the advisors that you're using? So really looking at that governance side of things first, and then thinking through what kind of targets are you setting? What kind of strategy have you put in place to mitigate those risks? Now, the data is there, as you were saying. Some of it you have to, you might have to use proxies, you might have to use data providers to be able to get hold of some of it. Hopefully that will increasingly shift, and you are seeing a big shift. I think the other thing that is helping to close that gap very rapidly is the fact that pension funds and other asset owners really have put a lot of pressure on the big asset managers to respond.
So Chandra, what do you think the biggest challenge is for the majority of trustees? I mean, we come from opposite ends of the spectrum here. You know, I'm trustee on a tiny little pension scheme, and, you know, you're senior investment manager in one of the largest pension schemes in the UK. And what do you think that the biggest challenge for trustees is going forward? Because I still feel that a lot of trustees are seeing this as a box-ticking exercise rather than actually fully understanding, you know, that they've got to manage the risk and the opportunities of climate change.
It really comes down to some very simple thinking around your portfolio. So whether you're a large scheme or a small scheme, thinking about, you know, on a very sort of macro level, thinking about what sort of sectors am I exposed to? What sort of countries am I exposed to? And if I don't have that information and I'm entirely externally managed, then I ask my external manager that question, saying, okay, show me what my distribution looks like of which sectors, which key companies, and give me an emissions snapshot. And that's really the conversation, where the conversation begins. And, you know, the investment managers, along with the educating the trustees and vice versa, the trustees learning as well in terms of, okay, where is my tail risk in my portfolio as it relates to climate in particular? So am I exposed heavily to energy in China? Do I have exposure to steel and cement and coal in India? Is that my distribution?
And do you think trustees should think about disinvesting from high carbon sectors? Does that resolve the problem?
It definitely doesn't resolve the problem, I can tell you that, because having ownership in a particular company actually gives you a voice. So you are an owner, you are a shareholder, you can hold the company to account through voting mechanisms in place. So divesting is not necessarily the first solution.
Because we work with both the asset owner community and all the way through asset managers and companies, we've been looking at it from both sides, and it really is very effective, particularly that collaborative engagement. The feedback we have from boards of directors and from the companies is just how impactful it can be. And you can really see the changes in the actions that have resulted from some of those collaborative engagements, particularly if you are at the smaller end of the spectrum. Really collaborating with others gives you an additional voice, but you don't need to be the big ones to have that impact and to be raising the questions. The other thing that I think is really effective in terms of that engagement side of things, and I'd agree with you, you need both the carrot and the stick. So the carrot of having that ownership and giving that support as an organisation does look at how they can transition. But then the stick of, there's no point you just having lots of nice engagement conversations and it having no impact. So what are you going to do if the company doesn't respond to what you're seeking and isn't taking these risks seriously? And then you've also, of course, seen examples in the US recently of the investment community managing to get that board of directors changed to have candidates voted through who really have got more experience and understanding of some of those transition risks. So I think you're seeing real examples of change.
So just to round this off, I'm going to go to Chandra first. What would your advice be to those schemes that might not have the resource of Railpen, might have a little bit more resource than my tiny little DC trust-based scheme? What would your advice be to those schemes? Where do they start?
Resources do help in terms of getting the engagement process going, getting your data and systems going, etc. But it doesn't have to be a resource-intensive process. It can simply begin with understanding your portfolio. So as trustee of a small scheme, understanding the composition of your portfolio, understanding what your external managers are doing and holding them to account, I think is definitely a good starting point on that front. In terms of the obligation for TCFD or not being obliged to report under TCFD, I'd say the TCFD provides a fantastic framework, but I think it's time to start thinking outside the regulatory checkbox, as you said. You know, it's not really about what can I do and what can I report within regulation, otherwise I'm going to be fined. Mm-hmm. It's more about, okay, what does this actually mean for me, even though I don't fit into the minimum AUM requirement that any of these regulators have? What does it mean for my portfolio? And that, to me, that sort of goes hand in hand with the fiduciary responsibility of protecting member interests and securing futures. Because if you actually do believe that climate risk is a financial risk, then you should be thinking about this anyway.
There's also a lot of tools out there. So just from an A4S, Accounting for Sustainability perspective, we've been doing quite a lot of work with pension fund trustees of all sizes, sharing some of the examples. So it's great to connect with your peers and just hear what others are doing, because I think that's a great starting point. It just gives you the confidence, gives you insight into how others have overcome some of those barriers. So we've also got a bit of a maturity map, which some of the trustees have used to start that discussion with their board. So just use some really simple things. And then there are lots of more detailed tools that you can gradually progress to. So you mentioned the IIGCC. They've done some great work on net zero, but that might be, you know, a few steps ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Chandra. Thank you, Jessica.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure to contribute. Yeah.
So that's got to the heart of the TCFD framework. The next episode is all about the devil is in the detail.
With all of that data from all the various sources, and the full range of standards and frameworks in the mix, where should asset owners really start? Metrics are a key part of that framework and underpin everything you do.
You've been listening to the CACEIS Climate Briefing. I'm Pat Sharman. Goodbye.